Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2, for Autumn Semester 2017. Lecture 18, delivered on October 26, 2017. The title of this lecture is Applications of Investment Decision-Making Rules.
Today, Applications of Investment Decision-Making Rules. This is a continuation of the lecture on Tuesday, and here I'm just going to show you some. Well, there's one new thing that I'm going to show you, and then I'm going to just show you some examples to make it easier for you to do the problems that you're assigned in the online assessments. As I had said before, as the course goes along, I will do more of that, giving you more chances to see how things are put together for some of those odd problems in the online world. Now, applications of investment decision-making rules. The one that I haven't, I have shown you the payback period, which again, you should not use, but it's still out there in some places, I'm quite sure of it. And of course, as one student brought up in class on Tuesday, we do see it being used in sort of an odd way in the commercial sale of certain types of items. You will get your money back in so many months if you spend more on this, all that kind of stuff. But we do want to look at these from the more technical aspect, as most of you, whether you are in finance or not, you will be in a company that most likely uses either the net present value rule or the internal rate of return rule. Now, here's the thing, though. As I had drawn in the last lecture, here is a profile of a net present value function. The line, as you recall, goes downward like that. At higher discount rates, the net present value gets smaller and smaller until it becomes negative. Now, if you're into that kind of stuff, the discount rate, R, for the project, you could say that the derivative of net present value with respect to the discount rate is negative. That just means it has a downward sloping line, for those of you who want to look, have something impressive in your notes in calculus. And this guy right here, this discount rate is the internal rate of return, the IRR. Here's the thing, though. Net present value and internal rate of return can both be used in simple examples. However, this kind of downward sloping line exists only when you have a single change in the sign of the cash flow from time 0, 1, 2, and just as a quick, dirty little example, 3, 4. You have an investment of, let's say, $1,000. And then you have in coming in the first year 200, then 400, then 300, and then $100, and then a salvage value at the end of, let's say, $80. Oops. And so you would always add that $80 right there so that the total for the last year is 180. That's 6, 9. Let's make this 350 just to keep it interesting. Now there's only one sign switch. That will lead to that profile right there. The net present value functions drop are downward sloping. However, unfortunately, this isn't the case for functions where the cash flow switches sign more than once. In situations like this, where the cash flow switches sign more than once, in other words, you would put money in, you start to earn revenue, then you have to put some more money in, and then you start earning revenue again. In a case like that, this is one sign change in cash flow right here. Unfortunately, if you have two sign changes in cash flow, here's your function again, discount rate. Thing looks like that. It's a polynomial. If you remember from your dark days of algebra, polynomial, the degree of a polynomial is the highest power to which the independent variable occurs. In this case, with one sign change, you have a degree one polynomial. It's linear. In other words, the highest power of the x is first power. In a sign change that is twice, you will have two roots. Remember, a quadratic equation has two roots. Somewhere along the line, you saw that. If there are three sign changes, the darn thing looks like this. In other words, you have multiple internal rates of return, which means that internal rate of return is a completely invalid measure. The calculator would, you give it, you key into your calculator or into Excel a cash flow pattern that has two sign changes, it'll give you an internal rate of return, no problem. The reason it will is because calculators begin by taking a guess. Okay, we're going to guess that the internal rate of return is like, oh, no, it's negative. So we're going to back up, keep backing. Oh, it's positive over here, so we must be somewhere in here, so it's going to give you this number. It has no meaning. It'll say, oh, there's your internal rate of return. We found it. But that's not a meaningful number. There is no internal rate of return if there's more than one sign change in the cash flow. So that's why, in general, the internal rate of return is a flawed measure for realistic cash flow patterns of projects. We would just simply say, well, that's not such a great idea. Yeah. They do an NPV. They'll do the net present value. Unfortunately, I have seen companies that still used internal rate of return. No one seemed to grasp that there was no meaning to the internal rate of return. They get a number. Yeah, the calculator will give you an IRR, but it just has no meaning whatsoever.
So can they try to isolate the sign changes and try to separate them?
Well, there's where we get to the next thing. You just got me to... There are some companies that are so darn dedicated to using internal rate of return that what they will do, this was created, whether or not this is a valid measure or not, it's really kind of like cheating and using net present value but still holding on to the internal rate of return concept. It's called the modified internal rate of return, the MIRR. Now, and it is a pain in the derhi rear to use. Interestingly enough, Excel, if you put your cash flows into Excel, you can use the NPV, open parentheses, show it the column of cash flows. You can use the IRR, open parentheses, show it the column of cash flows, and it'll do it. If you notice that there is more than one sign change, there is an Excel function called MIRR. So it can do this for you. But here is the modified internal rate of return. And this is way too much like work for me at this hour of the morning. 0, 1, and I'm going to wing this one because I didn't bring my example with me. 5,
6. Oh, God, I'm going to be so sorry I did this one. Okay, let's do the company initially has to pay $5,000. Now, after 1 year, they're in business. They're getting the product out there, selling it. So their net, their free cash flow for the first year is $1,000. Year two, they pull another $2,000. Year three, then they have to put some more money into it. They have to put in $1,500 because they've got experience and now they know what the consumers want. They're going to modify the product and it's going to cost them more than they're taking in revenue. Okay, so now we go to year four and they're back in business again. They pull in $2,000. Okay, we're at $3,000, $1,500, $3,000, and then the project dies away at $750 with a salvage value of $250, which we'll add right there for a total on the last year of $1,000. Now, here is how the modified internal rate of return works. The first thing that the company would have to do is get a cost of capital. In other words, how much does it cost us in interest rate to acquire the money to do this project? What is, if it's a bank loan, what did we have to do? What interest rate did they charge? If it's we sold a bond, okay, what was the coupon rate on the bond? You know, assuming it was at par value when we sold it. So let's say that the cost of capital for this project is 6%. I'm going to be so sorry I did this. Like I said, if you do it in Excel, it's actually quite fast. On your calculator, I'm not sure. I don't think the TIs do MIRR. But you're going to use a TI once you've gotten something done. Okay, so what we are going to do is we are going to pull all of the negative cash flows back to the present time. So in other words, the negative amount that was here, we're going to put with the amount that was initially invested. But of course, that will be negative $1,500 times 1 plus 0.06 to the negative 1 to third power, to the negative third power. So that when we add these two up, we've got a total present value of negative cash flows. And if I were to do that, I can do it myself. No, that's okay. No, let me just key it in. I blew that one last time so badly. I've got to rehabilitate myself here a little bit. 5,000 POSNEG plus 1,500 POSNEG times 1.06 to the negative third power equals negative 625943. Negative 625943. Okay, we've gotten that done now. Now comes the pain in the derry rear part of this. What I'm going to do now is for the MIRR, and there are several variations on this. Don't get me wrong. There are a couple of twists, different ways to do this. Say that again?
Would it be easier to use the accrual accounting rate of return?
No.
No.
No. Because it has the word accounting in it, and that makes it nasty.
Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to make you digress.
No. That just gets my adrenaline up when someone brings up an accounting thing. No. Anyway, now what we're going to do is we are going to take the future value at the end of the project of the positive cash flows. The future value of the positive cash flows, we're going to pull all of those SOBs out here to the end and add them to the last one. So this 3,000 would be 3,000 times 1.06 to the first power. We're taking forward positive. And 2,000 times 1.06 to the second power, because that'll grow 2 years. And then finally, and then another 2,000 times 1.06 to the third power. Fourth power. And then one last one, 1,000 times 1.06 to the fifth power. And don't forget to add the 1,000 that was right there at the end to begin with. Okay? So, playing some dramatic music here to try to get this thing going. 3,000 times 1.06. Oh, wait. Let me clear that out. I add in that $1,000 first, the 1,000 at the end, plus 3,000 times 1.06 to the first power, plus 2,000 times 1.06 to the second power, plus 2,000 times 1.06 to the fourth power, plus 1,000 times 1.06 to the fifth power equals 10,000 $290 and 38 cents, and that's a positive amount. Now we're ready for the next step, which is one step from where we can get this back to. I'm going to draw a new timeline, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and here's what I'm going to do. I have modified the cash flow timeline so that at the beginning, our initial investment is $6,259.43, and then for years 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, there is zero cash flow, and then at the end, there is a positive cash flow of $10,290.38. I have actually recreated the cash flow pattern to represent all of the negative cash flows as happening up front and all of the positive cash flows occurring at the back end of it. Now that I have done that, I can go to my TI-83 calculator and do the following. Hold on to your seats because this is about as weird as it gets. I'm going to go apps, finance, and I'm going to go down to the internal rate of return, 8, IRR, enter, and I'm back at the main screen. And I'm going to now treat this as a standard IRR problem. Remember, you don't put in a discount rate. You just put in the negative cash flow. The negative cash flow is 6259.43, comma. Now we're going to put in the positive cash flows, open braces, like that. Year 1, 0. Year 2, 0. Year 3, 0. Year 4, 0. Year 5, 0. And then $10,290. And 38 cents. Close the braces, second parenthesis, close the parentheses. 8.64% is the MIRR. Yeah. Where?
On the zero extra minor.
Oh. Will you 6259? My God. No. That's Alzheimer's. Okay, I'm sundowning. I'm heading for that happy home. They should write a song about that.
Yeah, so we should.
Bop, 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 bop. Anyway. Now, as you can see, that was a little bit like work. However, it actually... and like I said, you'll see several little twists on this. But if you notice, the net present value is hiding in there because in order to start this problem, you have to have a cost of capital, which is what you do to begin with a net present value, okay? You have to have a discount rate. So in a way, it's kind of hard to tell what the purpose of using an MIRR is if you're going to need an interest rate to start with, the cost of capital, to get your present values and your future values. But there you go. That's the modified internal rate of return. Is it common to... Yeah, there are companies that do it. They are so dedicated to the internal rate of return method that they will actually go ahead and even with some multiple sign switches in the cash flow, they will still want to use IRR, so they go to the MIRR, the modified internal rate of return. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And it's part of finance suites, too. I mean, we have these things that will do this for us. But the real issue, though, is that once we let computers start doing these things, then we tend to walk away and we never again question why. What is the background of this? What are the downsides? What are the cautions in letting this computer tell us what the answer is? What was its decision-making rule? That goes to an interesting problem that we are now having as we're coming very close to artificial intelligence. Some of the software that is now working is being built for artificial intelligence purposes, and right, we're getting really close. We found out that these computers had created their own language that we could not translate. And they were making the decisions in this language, working with each other. And we didn't know how they came to their decisions. They came out with decisions that looked fine. Well, yeah, that looks like... But we couldn't even see how they were discussing it, how they were working out through the best solution. Now, maybe it is the best. I don't know, but I'd sure like to know. When I go to a restaurant, I have my kid eat some food of mine before I do. You know, if the kid lives, then I'm okay. I'm not going to eat the food until I see what happens. You know, and it's not bad for the kid. Develops resistances, you know, immunities. I don't do. Well, yeah, I did that one. No. Okay, now, getting that thing off the board, I do want to show you just an example and apply a little bit more normal things to one of the situations that I was discussing with you, showing you internal rate of return and net present value in practice, and in practice in a specific situation that I had mentioned to you on Tuesday, and now I'm going to show you an example of it. Bear with me one moment here while I try to grab something. Bear with me for 1 minute while I figure out where the software in this is. Where is there some reason why they want to hide things from me? Oh, there we go. Here's the Word document for it. Yeah, okay. I wanted to make sure I had it up here. I'll give you a minute to write this one down. It did it again to me. Bear with me. There, it doubled it over. It irritates me when it does that. And this is a simple example. I had a feeling it was going to pull that stunt on me. Really? Sorry about that. Anyway, here you go. Just two projects. Now, you have to choose one of them. You're going to have to choose one of them. So what I'm going to do is, just so you have an example, of another example in your kit for doing this kind of thing, I'm bringing this one up so you can see it on the calculator one more time. Each of them, but you can also see something else that's going to happen here. These are mutually exclusive projects. Make sure you put that in your notes, mutually exclusive projects. So what we're going to do is I'm going to pull up the calculator, and I am going to get the, well, let me draw this up a little bit so I can get them both on here at the same time. Okay, so now I'm going to get the net present value of the first project. And that way, again, apps, finance, 7, which is NPV, and it takes you back to the main screen. Hang on here. Give me one split second. I need to check something real quick here. Didn't mean to do that. Okay, fine. Yeah. Now, first things first, let me get something done here. the cost of capital, I'm going to make 5.3%. I'll need that for the NPV, okay? Now, oh, I'm just testing you. Wow, it's a bad day. Okay, cost of capital. So now let me pull up the TI calculator and get the NPV. 5.3%, comma, initial capital outlay for the project A is 48, negative 48. Now, comma, and now open the braces. Again, you open the braces, and I put in the positive cash flows one after the other. 25, comma, 22, comma, 22, comma, 14. Close the braces, close the parenthesis, and you get a net present value for the project A of $25.81. $25, was that 83 cents? 81 cents. Now, let me do something here. Okay. Now, I'm going to go back now and control C. And get the internal rate of return of A. Now, the reason I'm going to do it in this order, deal with A completely first, is because of the trick I showed you before. Second, enter, and I can just go back in and overwrite the NPV with the IRR function. Apps, finance, 8. Now I've got to get rid of the discount rate because the IRR finds the discount rate. And now I can go enter. And the internal rate of return is 28.87%. Oh, for heaven's sakes. It's that stupid thing again. 28.87%. Okay. No big thing. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go down and I'm going to get control C for B. And I'm also going to get its internal rate of return. And by the way, let me put on the dollars here. And then I'm going to go over here. And then I'm going to put in get the internal rate of return. Of B. So now let me go ahead and do that. For B, I'm going to clear this out and I'm going to do apps, finance, NPV. It opens up. Now I give it the cost of capital again, 5.3, comma, and then the negative cash flow, in this case, negative $98, comma. Now we open the braces, and we pound in the numbers. 18, comma, 41, comma, 52, comma, 62. Close the braces, close the parentheses. Survey says $51 and $51.04. $51.04. Let me make sure that before I get the internal rate of return, what this means. If we take project A, both of them are yeses. If we take project A, it will contribute an additional $25.81 to the value of our company. If I take project B, it will contribute an additional $51.04 to the value of our company. So clearly, by the NPV rule, we should take B. Since we can't take them both, we'll take the one that enhances shareholder value more. But now let's go back and let's make sure that the internal rate of return does the same thing. So I'll do that same trick over again, second enter, so I can edit the formula, and I'll just go back over here to the beginning and overwrite the NPV with the IRR function, apps, finance, 8, internal rate of return. And then I get rid of the discount rate because that's what we find. And then I say, go. Uh-oh. The internal rate of return of project B is only 22.42%. In other words, these two projects, the net present value rule and the internal rate of return rule, give us exactly opposite decision directions. By the NPV rule, we accept project B and dispose of project A. By the internal rate of return rule, we reject project B and accept project A. This is what I told you yesterday, or on Tuesday, is that sometimes the two rules will give you conflicting answers. Now, do you see why the internal rate of return rule favors project A over project B? And this is important in a larger context. Notice the profile, the cash flow profile of project A. Project A is front-loaded. You see the front-loading of the cash flows? This project is the hero at the beginning, and then it tails off. And it's a cheaper project to start. So you put those two together, and the internal rate of return rule is going to love itself, this project. Project B, on the other hand, costs a lot more to start with. And it starts out as a loser. Do you see how its cash flow grows over time? Instead of being the flash in the pan at the beginning and tailing off, Project B starts looking not very good, but then over time, as consumers begin to be aware of the project and embrace the project, and they start to accept the product as a long-term part of their consumption, this project B grows very nicely. Hence, what will happen is that the internal rate of return rule is going to punish this project because the cash flows occur at the back end. The internal rate of return rule will like the project where the cash flows are at the front end. So if there are two mutually exclusive projects and one is a hero at the beginning and then tails off and the other is a hero later but starts out a dog, well, you can see what happens. And this is actually not that unusual to happen. In mutually exclusive projects, you'll find that your NPV rule and your IRR rule will give you different answers. And that is one of the dangers of the internal rate of return rule. It rewards products that are winners at the beginning and then they're losers as time goes on. And that's an important consideration if you are in an environment in a company where they say, well, we're going to use the internal rate of return rule to decide which one of these projects to go with, you have good cause to say, well, here's what's going to happen. It will choose a project that's the winner at the beginning and then dies on the backstroke. And the other one, the net present value rule, won't do that. Not as much. I should point out, not as much. It still does it. But there you go. A classic example of the distinction between the two rules and what that means in practice. By the way, if you're interested, this is one of your problems in your assignments online. So you might want to make sure that you get this one down. Now, I'm going to take you one step further. Here. Decision making. For projects. I had brought this up in the last lecture, but it's something that is important to consider, is that sometimes it's not free cash flow that we are looking at. It has to do with how much we save in money on one project versus another. So, for example, I could have a stay with old technology upgrade to new technology. Zero. And I'm going to do this fairly a short timeline on this one because otherwise it's just going to go on and on. One, two, three, four, five, six. Now, if we stay with our existing technology, there's going to be no upfront cost. Okay? And the overall cost of maintaining the old technology, negative 1200, negative 1500, negative 2000. Negative 2,500, negative 3,000, and let's take this out 6 years, negative 3,500. We're going to take a 6-year time horizon on this one. Now, if we go with the new technology, I should put this one down here. If we go with the new technology, right up front, it's going to cost us $10,000. Right up front. We don't have to spend that. We can keep the money. But we know that the maintenance costs on the new technology are going to be very low. Let's say that, for example, with this new technology, instead of finding parts and trying to keep these things running like buses or a fleet of vehicles, it'll be 400, negative 400, negative 500, negative 600, negative 800, and negative 800, and negative 1,000. These are maintenance costs. So the first thing I want to point out is that NPVs are not used only for negative cash flows. They are for positive cash flows out there. They can be used to compare staying with what we've got versus not staying with what we've got. Now, let's take a cost of capital here of 7.5% for our cost of capital. Now, this is going to be a straight-up net present value problem. And this is, we're going to make a decision on whether it's a go or a no-go to buy this new technology that is being offered to the company. So the first thing we're going to do is clear out, well, first turn on the calculator. No, I'm not going to upset myself today. Apps, finance, 7, NPV. Now, in this case, we've got a 7.5% discount rate, 7.5, comma. Now, we're going to look at the first project's NPV, and we're going to put in the first project will have a 0 upfront cost, comma. Now, open the braces, and we're going to put in 1,200. Now, by the way, technically, I could just put everything in as a positive number and then remember at the end that it's a negative, but I'm not going to do that. Whoop, I did it. Okay, second insert, negative sign, and then go down, 1,200, negative 1,500. Comma, negative 2,000, comma. And part of this is I'm just repeatedly doing this for you so you can get used to using the calculator after the abuse you took in using tables in accounting. 3,000, comma, negative 3,500. Close the braces, close the parentheses. Negative $10,253.74. Negative $253.74. Now, the NPV down here. I'm just going to start from the beginning here. Apps, finance, NPV, 7.5%, comma, $10,000 up front, comma, open the braces, and then pound in negative $400, comma, negative $400, comma, negative $500, comma, negative 600, comma, negative 800. Comma, negative 1,000. Close the braces. Close the parentheses. Wait a minute. Close the parentheses. Enter. What did I key in wrong there? Where is it? Right. Oh. Well, geez. Boy, that's touchy. I remember years ago when I was teaching remedial math, trying to make a distinction between a minus and a negative. Because in our common language, we'd say it's minus 20 degrees outside, but it's actually negative. And almost no one understood that there is actually a fundamental difference that calculators understand about that. Negative $12,775. And 20 cents. Well, look at that. It actually is more costly to embrace the new technology than it was to than it is to stick with the old technology. We find that, interestingly enough, in what was we were talking about in the last lecture, is that these very new systems tend to be quite expensive in their early introduction. In the first couple of years, first year or two, well, you're going to save all this money. Yeah, look at that. You save $800 in the first year. You save $1,100 in the second year. You save $1,500 in the third year. Do you see how you can say you save all this money? And, well, spank me. You're actually, it's better to stay with the old system. At least until, look, if you're not going to keep the house more than like 6-7 years, you're being silly to go with the new technology. Yes. There are. I mean, with these new systems, you've got the HEPA filters with a heating system, and with the solar panels, you've got, you feel like you're contributing to Mother Earth, and of course, Mother Earth comes back at you and destroys half your country with a hurricane. You know, gee, thanks, Mom, trying to save you and all that. But anyway, there are the qualitative measures, and in fact, but one of the things that you do have, and are the cold, hard numbers, though, unless we are able to quantify those qualitatives and put those in here, then we can't use them. That's one of the important things about financial decision making. We can't measure happy. We can't measure comfort. Well, we can try, but until you can give me a hard number, then I have to go with just the physical amount of money that is saved on the new technology over the old technology. Have any of you ever noticed that with, well, it's somewhat true today, but it was very true in years past. When a product is first introduced, it is stupidly expensive compared to what it's going to be in a year or two. That's why I shop on eBay, because I wait until the value. Oh, you've got to get the latest 8K TV. Well, because it is wonderful. Yeah, but it costs like $1 million. Do you really value your eyes at $1 million? Your pleasure experience? Companies tend to be very cold about these kinds of calculations. Yes, there is a new technology out there. Show us that the net present value of the cost of maintaining that system is lower than the net present value of the cost of maintaining the original system. Then we can talk. That's an important consideration when you're seeing these kinds of things and in your own lives about how much do you save by buying a new car. Are you going to save money by buying a new car, or are you just feeling the passion of owning something new? How much fuel economy savings are you going to get? How much are you going to reduce your maintenance expense with the new car versus the old car? The decision, actually, oftentimes, people are buying cars every 2 years or so. They're actually making a bad decision, except for the qualitative part of it. Because if I drive in to my fancy, yuppie neighborhood in a 3-year-old car, everyone's going to say, loser. But if I drive in a new car every year, well, I finally gave up on mine. It was kind of sad when I saw it being taken away to the junkyard. It was dead, so it didn't feel anything. It had no feelings left. It's lost its life. Anyway, so that's all I have for you today. I thank you.